fence.
An invisible border divides those arguing for computers in the classroom on behalf of students' career prospects and those arguing for computers in the classroom for broader reasons of radical educational reform. Very few writers on the subject have explored this distinction, indeed, contradiction, which goes to the heart of what is wrong with the campaign to put computers in the classroom. An education that aims at getting a student a certain kind of job is a technical education, justified for reasons radically different from why education is universally required by law. It is not simply to raise everyone's job prospects that all children are legally required to attend school in their teens. Rather, we have a certain conception of the American citizen, a character who is incomplete if he cannot competently assess how his livelihood and happiness are affected by things outside of himself. But this was not always the case. Before it was legally required for all children to attend school until a certain age, it was widely accepted that some were just not equipped by nature to pursue this kind of education. With optimism, characteristic of all industrialized countries, we came to accept that everyone is fit to be educated. Computer education advocates forsake this optimistic notion for a pessimism that betrays their otherwise cheery outlook. Banking on the confusion between educational and vocational reasons for bringing computers into schools, computer advocates often emphasize the job prospects of graduates over their educational achievements. There are some good arguments for a technical education given the right kind of student. Many European schools introduce the concept of professional training early on in order to make sure children are properly equipped for the professions they want to join. It is, however, presumptuous to insist that there will only be so many jobs for so many scientists, so many businessmen, so many accountants. Besides, this is unlikely to produce the needed number of every kind of profession in a country as large as ours, and where the economy is spread over so many states and involves so many international corporations. But, for a small group of students, professional training might be the way to go, since well-developed skills, all other factors being equal, can be the difference between having a job and not. Of course, the basics of using any computer these days are very simple. It does not take a lifelong acquaintance to pick up various software programs. If one wanted to become a computer engineer, that is, of course, an entirely different story. Basic computer skills take, at the very longest, a couple of months to learn. In any case, basic computer skills are only complementary to the host of real skills that are necessary to becoming any kind of professional. It should be observed, of course, that no school, vocational or not, is helped by a confusion over its purpose. Lesson 15, vocabulary. Startle, swift, oppose, propose, independent,
chair,
commission,
recommendation,
extend, avoid, restriction, routine, consensus, create, nuclear, stem, conclusion, current, forbid,
stage,
endanger, indicate, transfer, husbandry, clone, embryos.
Passage. When a Scottish research team startled the world by revealing 3 months ago that it had cloned an adult sheep, President Clinton moved swiftly, declaring that he was opposed to using this unusual animal husbandry technique to clone humans. He ordered that the federal funds not to be used for such an experiment, although no one had proposed to do so. And he asked an independent panel of experts, chaired by Princeton President Harold Shapiro, to report back to the White House in 90 days with recommendations for a national policy on human cloning. That group, the National Biotech Advisory Commission, has been working feverishly to put its wisdom on paper. And at a meeting on the 17th of May, members agreed on a near final draft of the recommendations.
NBAC will ask that Clinton's 90-day ban on federal funds for human cloning be extended indefinitely and possibly that it be made law. but NBAC members are planning to word the recommendation narrowly to avoid new restrictions on research that involves the cloning of human DNA or cells, routine in molecular biology. The panel has not yet reached agreement on a crucial question, however, whether to recommend legislation that it would make it a crime for private funding to be used for human cloning.
In a draft preface on the recommendations discussed at the May 17th meeting, Shapiro suggested that the panel had found a broad consensus that it would be morally unacceptable to attempt to create a human child by adult nuclear cloning. Shapiro explained during the meeting that the moral doubt stems mainly from fears about the risk to the health of the child. The panel then informally accepted several general conclusions, although some details have not been settled.
NBAC plans to call for a continued ban on federal government funding for an attempt to clone body cell nuclei to create a child. Because current federal law already forbids the use of federal funds to create embryos for research or to knowingly endanger an embryo's life, NBAC will remain silent on embryo research.
NBAC members also indicated that they will appeal to privately funded researchers and clinics not to try to clone humans by body cell nuclear transfer, but they were divided on whether to go further by calling for a federal law that would impose a complete ban on human cloning. Shapiro and most members favored an appeal for such legislation, but in a phone interview, he said this issue was still up in the air.
Vocabulary. Orbit. Predict. Essential. Tend. Substitute. Conference, frown, graph, budget, speculate, amount, victim, convince, industrial, faithful, logical, distract, register, microscope, regularity,
blame.
Discriminating, conventional,
passage.
Science, in practice, depends far less on the experiment it prepares than on the preparedness of the minds of the men who watch the experiment. Sir Isaac Newton supposedly discovered gravity through the fall of an apple. Apples had been falling in many places for centuries, and thousands of people had seen them fall. But Newton, for years, had been curious about the cause of the orbital motion of the moon and planet. What kept them in place? Why didn't they fall out of the sky? The fact that the apple fell down toward the earth and not up into the tree answered the question he had been asking himself about those larger fruits of the heavens, the moon and the planet. How many men would have considered the possibility of an apple falling up into the tree? Newton did, because he was not trying to predict anything. He was just wondering. His mind was ready for the unpredictable. Unpredictability is part of the essential nature of research. If you don't have unpredictable things, you don't have research. Scientists tend to forget this when writing their cut-and-dried reports for technical journals, but history is filled with examples of it. In taking to some scientists, particularly younger ones, you might gather the impression that they find the scientific method a substitute for imaginative thought. I've attended research conferences where a scientist has been asked what he thinks about the advisability of continuing a certain experiment. The scientist has frowned, looked at the graph, and said, "The data are still inconclusive." "We know that," the men from the budget office have said, "but what do you think? Is it worthwhile going on? What do you think we might expect?" The scientist has been shocked at having even been asked to speculate. What this amounts to, of course, is that the scientist has become the victim of his own writings. He has put forward unquestioned claims so consistently that he not only believes them himself, but has convinced industrial and business management that they are true. If experiments are planned and carried out according to plan as faithfully as the reports in the science journals indicate, then it is perfectly logical for management to expect research to produce results measurable in dollars and cents. It is entirely reasonable for auditors to believe that scientists who know exactly where they are going and how they will get there should not be distracted by the necessity of keeping one eye on the cash register while the other eye is on the microscope, nor if regularity and conformity to a standard pattern are as desirable to the scientist as the writing of his papers would appear to reflect, is management to be blamed for discriminating against the oddballs among researchers in favor of more conventional thinkers who work well with the team? Lesson 16, vocabulary. Definition. Conform. Scatter. Frequent. Partial. External.
Validity.
Internal. Philosophy. Govern. Source. Augment. Additional. Interpret. Ambiguous. Profession. Peculiar. Inquiry. Accuse. Tunnel. Apply. Criticism. Partisan. Irony. Affinity. Imperative. Equate.
Patent.
While there are almost as many definitions of history as there are historians, modern practices most closely conforms to one that sees history as the attempt to recreate and explain the significant events of the past. Caught in the web of its own time and place, each generation of historians determines anew what is significant for it in the past. In this search, the evidence found is always incomplete and scattered. It is also frequently partial or partisan. The irony of the historian's craft is that its practitioners always know that their efforts are but contributions to an unending process.
Interest in historical methods had arisen less through external challenges to the validity of history as an intellectual discipline and far more internal quarrels among historians themselves. While history once revered its affinity to literature and philosophy, the emerging social sciences seem to afford greater opportunities for asking new questions and providing rewarding approaches to an understanding of the past. Social science mythologies have had to be adapted to a discipline governed by the primacy of historical sources rather than the imperatives of the contemporary world.
During this transfer, traditional historical methods were augmented by additional methodologies designed to interpret the new forms of evidence in the historical study.
Methodology is a term that remains inherently ambiguous in the historical profession. There is no agreement whether methodology refers to the concepts peculiar of historical work in general or to the research techniques appropriate to the various branches of historical inquiry. Historians, especially those so blinded by their research interests and they have been accused of tunnel methods, frequently fall victim to the technicious fallacy, also common in the natural sciences. The technicious fallacy mistakenly identifies the discipline as a whole with certain parts of its technical implementation.
It applies equally to traditional historians who view history as only the external and internal criticism of sources, and to social science historians who equate their activity with specific techniques.
Vocabulary. Technology. Capture. Dam. Mercy. Drought. Ideal. Bidding. Fascinate. Assert. Cement. Turkey. Status. Deprive. Fertile. Reservoir. Generate. Myth. Persist. Civilize. Troop. Complex. Independence. Destruction. Benefit. Guarantee. Monster. Still. Patent.
Few creations of big technology capture the imagination like giant dams. Perhaps it is humankind's long suffering at the mercy of flood and drought that makes the ideal of forcing the waters to do our bidding so fascinating. But to be fascinated is also sometimes to be blind. Several giant dam projects do more harm than good. The lesson from dams is that big is not always beautiful. It doesn't help that building a big, powerful dam has become a symbol of achievement for nations and people striving to assert themselves. Egypt's leadership in the Arab world was cemented by the Aswan High Dam. Turkey's bid for first world status includes the giant Atatürk Dam, but big dams tend not to work as intended. The Aswan Dam, for example, stopped the Nile flooding, but deprived Egypt of the fertile silt that floods left, all in return for a giant reservoir of disease, which is now so full of silt that it barely generates electricity. And yet, the myth of controlling the waters persists. This week, in the heart of civilized Europe, Slovaks and Hungarians stopped just short of sending in the troops in their contention over a dam on the Danube. The huge complex will probably have all the usual problems of big dams, but Slovakia is bidding for independence from the Czechs, and now needs a dam to prove itself. Meanwhile, in India, the World Bank has given the go-ahead to the even more wrong-headed Narmada Dam. And the bank has done this even though its advisors say the dam will cause hardship for the powerless and environmental destruction. The benefits are for the powerful, but they are far from guaranteed. Proper scientific study of the impacts of dams and of the costs and benefits of controlling water can help to resolve these conflicts. Hydroelectric power and flood control and irrigation are possible without building monster dams. But when you are dealing with myths, it is hard to be either proper or scientific. It is time that the world learned the lessons of Aswan. You don't need a dam to be saved. Lesson 17. Vocabulary. Assume. Statistics. Lump. Previous. Underlying. Junction. Leap. Contribution, overall, joint, machinery, profitable, switch, executive, bakery, revenue, reduction, colleague, chop, sufficient, dismiss, consultant, near, ambulance, revival, anecdote, downsizing, speculative, inept, blunt.
Passage. Well, no gain without pain, they say. But what about pain without gain? Everywhere you go in America, you hear tales of corporate revival. What is harder to establish is whether the productivity revolution that businessmen assume they are presiding over is for real. The official statistics are mildly discouraging. They show that if you lump manufacturing and services together, productivity has grown on average by 1.2% since 1987. That is somewhat faster than the average during the previous decade. And since 1991, productivity has increased by about 2% a year, which is more than twice the 1978-87 average. The trouble is that part of the recent acceleration is due to the usual rebound that occurs at this point in a business cycle, and so is not conclusive evidence of a revival in the underlying trend. There is, as Robert Rubin, the Treasury Secretary, says, a disjunction between the mass of business antidotes that points to a leap in productivity and the picture reflected by the statistics. Some of this can be easily explained. New ways of organizing the workplace all that re-engineering and downsizing are only one contribution to the overall productivity of an economy, which is driven by many other factors, such as joint investment in equipment and machinery, new technology, and investment in education and training. Moreover, most of the changes that companies make are intended to keep them profitable, and this need not always mean increasing productivity. Switching to new markets or improving quality can matter just as much. Two other explanations are more speculative. First, some of the business restructuring of recent years may have been ineptly done. Second, even if it was well done, it may have spread much less widely than people suppose. Leonard Schleisinger, a Harvard academic and former chief executive of Au Bon Ton, a rapidly growing chain of bakery cafes, says that much re-engineering has been crude. In many cases, he believes, the loss of revenue has been greater than the reductions in cost. His colleague, Michael Beer, says that far too many companies have applied re-engineering in a mechanistic fashion, chopping out costs without giving sufficient thought to long-term profitability. BBDO's Al Rosenshine is blunter. He dismisses a lot of the work of re-engineering consultants as mere rubbish, the worst sort of ambulance casing. Vocabulary. Aspect. Rebel. Catholic. Ignore. Critic. Assemble. Philosopher. Concern. Ghost. Survey. Reveal. Attach. Virus. Republican. Decrease.
Manifesto.
Scorn. Essay. Respond. Global.
Regard.
Enlighten. Harsh. Schism. Creationism. Elimination. Smallpox. Unabomber. Utopia. Depletion. Epithet. Passage.
Science has long had an uneasy relationship with other aspects of culture. Think of Galileo's 17th century trial for his rebelling belief before the Catholic Church, or poet William Blake's harsh remarks against the mechanistic worldview of Isaac Newton. The schism between science and the humanities has, if anything, deepened in this century. Until recently, the scientific community was so powerful that it could afford to ignore its critics, but no longer. As funding for science has declined, scientists have attacked anti-science in several books, notably Higher Superstition by Paul R. Gross, a biologist at the University of Virginia, and Norman Levitt, a mathematician at Rutgers University, and The Demon-Haunted World by Carl Sagan of Cornell University. Defenders of science have also voiced their concerns at meetings such as the Flight from Science and Reason, held in New York City in 1995, and Science in the Age of Misinformation, which assembled last June near Buffalo. Anti-science clearly means different things to different people. Gross and Levitt find fault primarily with sociologists, philosophers, and other academics who have questioned science objectivity. Sagan is more concerned with those who believe in ghosts, creationism, and other phenomena that contradict the scientific worldview. A survey of news stories in 1996 revealed that the anti-science tag has been attached to many other groups as well, from authorities who advocated the elimination of the last remaining stocks of smallpox virus to Republicans who advocated decreased funding for basic research. Few would dispute that the term applies to the Unabomber, whose manifesto, published in 1995, scorns science and longs for return to a pre-technological utopia. But surely that does not mean environmentalists concerned about uncontrolled industrial growth are anti-science, as an essay in U.S. News and World Report last May seemed to suggest. The environmentalists inevitably respond to such critics. The true enemies of science, argues Paul Ehrlich of Stanford University, a pioneer of environmental studies, are those who question the evidence supporting global warming, the depletion of the ozone layer, and other consequences of industrial growth. Indeed, some observers fear that the anti-science epithet is in danger of becoming meaningless. The term anti-science can lump together too many quite different things, notes Harvard University philosopher Gerald Bolton in his 1993 work, Science and Anti-Science. They have in common only one thing, that they tend to annoy or threaten those who regard themselves as more enlightened. Lesson 18, vocabulary. Emerge, census, region, annual, prevail, shift,
role,
apparent, instance, respective, compose,
belt,
climate, statistics, migrate, smog, crime, plague, stand still, enthron, spacious, urbanization.
Passage. Emerging from the 1980 census is the picture of a nation developing more and more regional competition as population growth in the Northeast and Midwest reaches a near standstill. This development and its strong implications for U.S. politics and economy in years ahead has enthroned the South as America's most densely populated region for the first time in the history of the nation's head counting. Altogether, the U.S. population rose in the 1970s by 23.2 million people, numerically the third largest growth ever recorded in a single decade. Even so, that gain adds up to only 11.4%, lowest in American annual records, except for the Depression years. Americans have been migrating south and west in larger numbers since World War II, and the pattern still prevails. Three Sunbelt states, Florida, Texas, and California, together had nearly 10 million more people in 1980 than a decade earlier. Among large cities, San Diego moved from 14th to 8th, and San Antonio from 15th to 10th, with Cleveland and Washington, D.C. dropping out of the top 10. Not all that shift can be attributed to the movement out of the Snow Belt, census officials say. Nonstop waves of immigrants played a role too, and so did bigger crops of babies as yesterday's baby boom generation reached its childbearing years.